The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week. It is the best Tuesday of all week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me today,
Matt Dixon.
All right, I got it out with all the enthusiasm and gusto I could.
Can you try it again?
No.
We're not going to make listeners
endure
that.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show that you never left. Yeah. Here we go, guys. We are rocking and rolling on this. Can we just officially declare it like a woo kind of week?
It's been a doozy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to not unpack it a little bit. It is a show about finance, and I think everywhere you look, it's something about like, oh no, the sky is falling, it's all over.
And let's be realistic, though. We had 2 years of easy radio shows, right? Like, the markets were going up, and the radio shows were easy, and now we've been thrown a curveball, and it's like, people are, you know, wondering what's going on, and now the job gets mildly more difficult.
Is it? Yeah, I don't know that the show. I disagree. I don't think the show.
You just got to pull a lot
easy.
More stats.
I think right now the thing is, a lot of the time the show is like, look, if the markets are kind of going up, then we talk about other aspects of planning.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you what, and this is not in our notes. I'm going to throw Matt off the hunt immediately.
I like it. I like curveballs.
Yeah, the curveball is look. If you are worried about this market, then that is evidence that you have a gap in your financial plan.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, it just is. Because the truth of the matter is that financial plans are designed to have liquidity in them so that you still have accessible money so that you don't have to force liquidate in a time like right now.
Right. So that you can ride out the times that are more difficult.
Exactly. Because we have talked about this ad nauseum behind the scenes amongst our advisor corps and our investment committee. And one thing is pretty unanimous. We're pretty confident that 2 years from now, this is a distant memory. And the probability that the markets are higher than they were before they fell is still very likely. I mean, I can't get on the radio and say, like, it's a sure thing. You can't do that because, you know, rules. But the likelihood is statistically so high that it would be an anomaly for us to not be higher 2 years from now, which means if you don't have to sell stuff right now, then don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and you know what? If you have dry powder, it makes the game more interesting. Right?
It really does. Yeah. Like if you were stepping in today and you were completely uninvested and you just had this pile of money and then you look and you're like, oh, like
yeah,
the NASDAQ's
cow.
Down.
It all went on sale.
Yeah. The NASDAQ's down 20 or something. You're like, oh, well, maybe it's like reasonably
priced.
Could
I buy this in 2022 prices instead of 2025 prices? So sign me up.
You're right. Yeah.
Right. And here's, oh, by the way, pro tip, not advice, but if it is advice, it is advice to go get advice, okay? Could be a very interesting time for folks that are considering converting traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs. If that is relevant to your plan, it may be really interesting. And that's a talk to your financial advisor. And if you're not hearing from your advisor, call us.
Right. Yeah, because you can, in theory, when the markets are down, like say you did lose, you know, 20% of your portfolio's worth, right? Like, and then you go and convert half of your portfolio. That's,
yeah. Well,
like, do easy numbers. Like, if you had $100,000 in your account and the market drops 20%, and you're at 80, and then you go and convert half of it, you just converted $40,000. Whereas if you had converted all of it when the market was hot, you would have converted $50,000. And it's like, both of those are half your account. Why not?
Well, so think about, I have a visual analogy for you. Imagine if you could take a spring and compress it down. And then just like your account, you smash it down, you convert it to a different type of account, right? And
where
then you let the spring expand
free.
Again, right? And so what you do, you smash it down, you pay taxes on a smaller amount, and then when the spring expands back out, you pay taxes on the smaller amount, but it springs back. And after taxes, the spring back gives you more tax-free money after.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a Roth conversion interesting when markets are really beat up.
Right.
Right? And what are we right now? Kind of beat up. Doesn't mean the game's over. There might be more to come. But all I know is it's on a heck of a sale compared to where we were even a week ago.
Right.
Right? Yeah. This time a week ago, we were talking about like, huh, look at that.
Here's the thing that I find interesting, right? And I think we've seen this more and more recently. How many times have we seen a pullback in the market and it happens like before you can hardly blink your eyes, right?
Right.
Like this has been over the course of what? Oh,
about
2 weeks?
About 4 market days, right?
Yeah.
Because basically
like, yeah, the big
April
part of,
1st
the big
was
part of
Tuesday.
It. Yeah.
The tariffs came out on April 2nd, but they didn't get announced until after market close. So what did we have? Thursday and Friday, Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we've had 4 market days with which to do all of the reacting. And the reality is, like, unless you are a trader, it's probably like, what happened? Like,
mm-hmm. People might not even know yet. That's how quickly this is. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the reality is you used to see markets, you know, maybe a year of like trying to process stuff. And now we process so much information so quickly.
Yeah.
And look at like with these tariffs. You know, we implement something and then days later we have countries stepping up to negotiate, right? Like,
yep.
Like how fast did that information travel and how fast did we get a reaction? We're talking days. This hasn't been months of this.
The speed of information is unprecedented. And I got to tell you, I think that we're seeing the next iteration of information acceleration. Boy, try to say that fast. The next iteration of information acceleration. I'm never going to do that again, I hope. But it moves so fast,
mm-hmm.
right? You remember when you had to write a memo before. And today, you could have AI write an email and push it out to everybody in seconds.
It's crazy.
It's amazing how fast things are now and how information gets distributed so quickly, right? And why is this relevant? I'll tell you why, because the markets can reprice so quickly. Like,
mm-hmm.
like think about 2020 or so. You remember what happened in 2020, in
yeah,
March
like,
of 2020?
I think the market shed 35-40% of its value in, a couple months or less?
Or less,
yeah.
Right? The markets fell in March, and by the end of May going into June, they had recovered and were going on to highs for the year. So
mm-hmm.
you ended up profiting in the COVID year. In 2020, when they shut down the world, markets dipped, recovered, and then went on to new all-time highs.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at this and think, what is different this time? And my sense is we know a lot more now. Right?
In COVID, we
were guessing.
Right,
right now, the tariffs were laid out. What we don't know is who's going to come to the negotiating table and improve
mm-hmm.
these deals, because they don't seem like they're on a track to get any worse, but we've priced in a worst case scenario. What if it's not worst case? What if it gets better?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's a valid question.
You know, what if this was a strategic move out of the White House and not just a completely clumsy knucklehead move?
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people are saying, look at how reckless this is, you know. But what you're saying is, what if this was really strategic and what if it was more calculated?
Yeah. I mean, I will not suggest that they could account for every variable, but I might suggest that the idea that this was designed to specifically collapse the economy and ruin everything as we know it seems unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, no one really wins if everything is really bad for a really long time, right? Like, you don't buy votes that way.
I've never heard a rational argument from somebody where they just say, like, it's just the rich people wanting to amass power. And when you kind of peel the layers back, you go, can you prove to me that that argument is nothing more than emotional bravado?
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's never data ground. It's just, I'm passionate about hating the bad guys are people that do things. And it's like, what people and what things? We don't talk about that, right? It's just frustration.
Right.
And it's fair to be frustrated, but this idea of like, it's all billionaires. And then like now it's like, well, how many billionaires, you know? It's like, well, Elon Musk, but I hate him, right? Well, okay. I mean, he is a billionaire and you have a right to hate him. It's a free country.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the specific thing that he's done? Well, you know, he's part of Doge. So, okay, well, but what's the thing? I don't know. I mean, I hear they're shutting stuff down and they're just cutting all this money and firing everybody. You go, okay, where's the audit? And it's, well, there's teenagers or this, that, and the other. Say, okay, tell me the specific cuts that you're really mad about.
Right.
And there may be some. There are people out there that do have that kind of information, but so many don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the frustration.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things that's weighing on everything right now is this cloud of, like, where do the tariffs actually land, right? Like, that's the news cycle.
Yeah.
Tariffs, tariffs, tariffs.
Talk to me more about that. I mean, this tariff thing. So, I mean, mm-hmm. first of all, can you, before we get too deep into this, help right. our listeners out. Can you explain just tariffs conceptually?
Yeah,
what is a tariff?
In a real simple way, it's a tax on goods coming in or out of a country, right?
Okay.
That's really the most simple way that I can describe that. And so you know,
like, can you give me an example? I mean, it could be fictional, but let's pretend like this
right.
is how a tariff works.
So say you're bringing something into the United States and we have a 10% tariff on it.
Like, can we talk about avocados? There's an inside
avocados.
Joke. Avocados. It's an inside joke.
I
want
right?
to
know. I want to know.
Well, it's actually really simple. So back in the day, my wife and I, we would buy avocados. And sometimes avocados are this stupid fruit that I swear it's like ripe for 4 seconds.
I don't think, by the way, this is completely a rabbit trail. I don't think that we should be able to call avocados a fruit because they taste so much more like a vegetable and they're just gross.
They're not gross.
They're disgusting.
You're just wrong, Matt. Let it go.
Okay.
The idea, though, that avocados, they stay ripe for a limited amount of time, right? And they're kind of mm-hmm. hard. Sometimes you get one and you get home and it's like, it's bad. Well, you can't
often,
really,
yeah.
You can't really return it to the store. You just lose the avocado.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating, but at some point, you just kind of have to understand that, well, a certain amount of avocado that you bring home is going to go bad and it's part of the cost.
Right.
Right. And so when I say avocado, that's actually a code word in our house for that's a rounding error. Like, that's not mm-hmm. a thing to be mad about. It's too small and you just have to let it go.
Right.
You know, so anytime that something happens, like, oh, shoot, this darn thing, and it's, you know, I had to spend an extra $3 at a parking meter or something, and it's like, I get it, but it's avocados.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I like avocados for that joke. But for the purpose of our illustration, talk to me about importing avocados and what is the tariff?
Yeah, so if you import those avocados and you bought a big box of them and it was $100 and there's a 10% tariff, you know, you're going to spend $10 to that country to import that product. And
it's like a sales tax coming in from the country?
Kind of, yeah. And so that's basically the easiest way.
Yeah, it actually is a basic way to look at it, huh?
Right. And so we have been going through, and we did a 10% tariff on any country that I believe what was
it? Tariff of any kind.
Yeah, and then basically, if you had over a 10% tariff on us, what we did is we just said, whatever you're tariffing us, we're going to tariff you at half that rate, right? So, like, if you had a 20% tariff on us, you know,
an automatic 10% tariff.
Yeah,
on
so 30 turns to 15. If you have a 50% tariff, we're going to tariff you at 25. And the big headline article today in the news was, well, you know, China, we estimated that they were tariffing us at 67%.
Okay, wait.
Uh-huh.
This is too good. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about China and tariffs, yeah?
I think so.
Okay, so we're going to do this. Let's grab our first break.
All right.
We're at this point where we can do it. So, because I want our listeners to be like, you got to hear this, right?
Well,
you
got to
hear what's happening with the tariffs in
one.
China.
This is a real big one.
It is.
You're
going
to want to hear this.
All right. So stick around. On the flip side of this, we come back. Matt tells me all about Chinese tariffs.
Oh, yes.
All right. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Oh, and I can't wait for that part. Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with me is...
Matt Dixon.
Okay, Matt, we're talking tariffs.
Right.
And the elephant in the room. So first, just quick rehash. And guys, you can grab the podcast, get caught up on all this. But give us a rehash on like the what is going on in the tariff world leading up to the big news today in China.
Yeah. So basically Trump's, you know, statement is I want to balance the trade a little bit. Right. And so how does he do that? He looks at all of these countries that have a tariff on us, and he says, I am going to come up with my own tariff. And basically, for most countries, it was half of what we're being tariffed. So they estimated where are we at, and if a country was at 40% tariff on us, he said, we're going to give you a 20% tariff. Mm-hmm. The headline news today centered around China, right?
Okay.
So let's kind of
talk to me about
walk
China.
This
where
back.
Yeah, where did it start?
So we hit a lot of countries with tariffs. China was not, you know, exclusive in this. The European Union, Vietnam, Taiwan, Japan, India, go down the list, right?
Okay, so China, basically, everybody that was tariffing the United States got at least a 50% response, reciprocal tariff is what it was called.
Exactly.
Okay. And can I just make one quick comment?
Yep.
Like, there's a lot of folks that have kind of immediately thrown out reciprocal tariffs are stupid. It's not the economy works. And, you know, these idiots, what are they thinking? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we kind of know that's the backdrop. And there's a lot of people that that's their position. So let's unpack this further. So
okay.
What happens?
Okay. So China, they estimated we were being tariffed at a rate of 67%. So you go roughly half of 67%, and that is around 34%, right?
Okay.
So that's our initial tariff. China was a country that really didn't appreciate that. And so they said, well, if you give us a 34% tariff, we're going to do the same thing right back to you.
But they already had a 67%
tariff. They already
tariff.
Did. So they tacked on another 34%.
Which put them where?
At
101?
101, yeah.
Okay.
Are you following this?
I'm with you.
So Trump said, I'm going to give you a day to drop that that additional tariff, get rid of the 34%.
Yes.
That was the thing he wanted. Like, let's just keep this at 67% for you guys, 34% for us.
Mm-hmm.
So he was okay initially with being at half the rate that China.
And China said, well, then we're going to up the ante.
Yep.
And then Trump said,
you have a day to figure this out.
Yeah.
They did not withdraw.
Not only that, I think they kind of doubled down.
Well, so.
I mean, didn't they more or less defiantly say,
we're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Well, they said, not only are we not going to rescind this tariff, but we will never back down to you guys. And so they took kind of some threatening language towards the United States. And so Trump,
I'm guessing that worked really well.
Yeah. So Trump today said, and what's interesting, right, is we saw the markets open high mm-hmm. this morning, right? Up 3% or so.
Yep.
And when Trump releases the news that, in fact, you guys messed up, now we're going to hit you with 104% tariff.
Mm-hmm.
The markets didn't like that. And so we saw the markets kind of step a little bit lower. Because, hey, more uncertainty in the mix.
Right.
And we're watching the punches start to fly. And so it is a trade war, right? Like, you're throwing punches back and forth.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And so now the question is, you know, how does it shake out over a long period of time?
Boy, so let's play that game. Tell me first. And this, again, I guess I'm going to just kind of disclose to our listeners. We're guessing.
Sure.
Right? And the other thing is, maybe before we go down this path, let's go down the path. Because I was like, well, how much does this affect people? Like,
it
kind of depends on what happens, right?
It really does. And so I think you kind of play.
So what are some of the things that could happen?
Well, let's just first start with facts. Because if you jump right into speculation, that's never good, right? Like, start with some stuff that you know.
I don't know. People make it up all the time. I mean, 87% of statistics are made up on the spot, right?
There you go. No, so one of the things that I found interesting, because I wanted to know more about this, so I started digging. And so what I found was that China actually produces 60% of all of the Earth's rare minerals that are used in making missiles, cell phones, any electronics, LED lights, all of the machines for like MRIs, all of that stuff.
Is that within their own borders?
Yes.
Is that?
It gets worse.
Well, no, hang on, because let me ask.
They're mining.
There's a reason I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Because there's tremendous rare earth mineral supplies, I understand, in Africa,
mm-hmm.
as well as Ukraine.
So there are a lot of rare earth minerals They're everywhere.
Well, keep in mind, though, Africa is largely Chinese right now. Like,
right.
That's, they've been making a lot of inroads in Africa, so they may still control that.
Well, so we I haven't even got to the control part.
I didn't know if it
part.
Was domestic production or not.
It is, because they have the facilities that are actually refining it. That's what this all comes down to.
Okay, but,
rare
but,
earth
so
minerals
are
everywhere.
They don't necessarily have the mining, but they have the refining.
So...
like, within their own borders,
it gets
right?
worse.
You're saying all of rare earth minerals are in China specifically.
60% of of the global supply,
okay.
60% is being mined in China.
Okay.
90% of it is being refined in China.
Okay.
And then if you look at how much of that product are they actually controlling, 70%.
Okay.
It's a massive number.
Okay.
And... so I think that's one of the real pivotal points in all of this is China knows that they're in control of that. And if they want to cut that supply off, I mean, that would be absolutely devastating to the United States. However, what would that do to their country?
Yeah,
right?
What's, like, what's left?
Yeah, what's left of China? And so that's in the background looming between these tariffs. What happens with the rare earth minerals? So,
is it ridiculous to me? I'm like, but what about all of the vibranium? Yeah, fictional metal.
Thank you for that joke. But here's an interesting thing for I'm going to put that in the back of your mind because we'll come back to it later.
Okay.
But GDP, right? I want to talk about so far, what has the GDP hit been from all of these tariffs? And GDP meaning gross domestic product.
Right.
They're estimating a 0.4% hit to our GDP.
And as I understand it, it's a 0.4% hit to the growth, right? Like if GDP has been growing at 3.4%, then it would be at 3% now. Is that correct?
I think that's right. I think you said that correctly.
Okay, so it's still growing, but it's just the rate of growth has
been... Yes, that part reduced. I can say is correct. We still have GDP growth. It has slowed, right? But
actually,
it hasn't gone negative.
I may not have said that correctly. If you're saying it's... No, it's 0.4% of GDP is a 0.4 out of the GDP number. It's not like...
Right, of the total.
Like four...
Right, we're not even at
of
half
a
of a percent.
Of,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, not a huge hit. So, I kind of look at that and say, well, is this short-term pain maybe for a long-term gain? Because how many jobs could that bring back? What do those jobs look like? That's a whole nother issue, right?
And see, you just kind of jumped the shark for our listeners. When you start talking about jobs without, there's not the context there. This is what happens, by the way, with financial guys, is that we nerd out on this stuff, and then you're listening and going, wait a minute, you just leapt to another topic. I don't even know how you got there. All right, help our listeners out. Jobs, what do you mean? Like, why would jobs happen because of tariffs?
Right, so that's a great question, actually. So if you look at this and you say, hey, you know, production costs are really expensive now because of tariffs. Like, say this thing continues to escalate, right? To the point to where it no longer makes any financial sense to pay.
Apple iPhones are made in China.
And
they're double
$4,000. Yeah, a $4,000
so
iPhone.
Holy cow, I guess we'll just make Apple iPhones in California instead.
Right, and that's actually been a topic of conversation. Should Apple bring a lot of the iPhone manufacturing back to stateside? But Apple's already said that when it comes to the assembly of the phones, they would rather invest in robots to do the final assembly than human hands, because it would be way cheaper to just pay it once and then pay the cost of the maintenance on the robots than the labor in the United States.
Well, and let's be clear, there's a difference between bringing manufacturing back to the United States and bringing back manufacturing jobs to the United States.
And that's a big piece. I think the manufacturing jobs come back, but I don't think it really changes our workforce as much as people think that it will.
I think you just said that the manufacturing jobs come back. Did you mean to say just the manufacturing?
The manufacturing comes back. It's a job, but just because it's a job doesn't mean a human's going to do it.
That's what I was looking for. And so that I agree. I think this is where AI and robotization can really change the nature of how we produce things.
Oh, yeah. Robotics will continue to become a bigger and bigger deal. Yeah. Like, go to your grocery store. The number of checkers there checking you out has been cut by over half.
Mm-hmm.
It's all self-checkout. A computer or a robot or whatever you want to call it has largely taken that job over.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to do so. And I think that's why you can make a really solid case for this investment in AI isn't over. Tech stocks might be down, you know, 23%, but it doesn't mean that spending is going to stop. And so that's why I'm like, the economy and the stock market are not always walking and talking the same language.
Yeah. By the way, future show idea and something fun, I'd love to get feedback from our listeners and our viewers online is, would you like us to do a show where we talk a little bit about what might the future economy look like in a world where AI and robotization really proliferate, right? Like, there's a ton of robotics, there's a ton of AI. What's left for humans to do?
I don't think it's as far away as people think that it is. I think I'll see it in my lifetime.
Oh, I think we'll see a lot of things where it steps in. But what's interesting to me is I don't think humans are useless.
No, absolutely
like,
not.
I don't think so at all. I think that things evolve. And I really would think along the lines of service type scenarios where, you know, robots are really good at doing things the same way over and over again. And AI is really good at chewing through data really, really fast. But for what end? Like, what are we trying to do with it? What's the what is the economic need? Because I still think machines don't have a lot of needs other than, well, once we do what we do, that's what we do. So, like, a robot doesn't need a lot of creativity. It doesn't get bored.
Yeah.
Right? And it doesn't have a lot of metabolic needs.
I think air avoidance is one of the biggest pieces that you can, like,
there's so
make
much
a claim
to
for.
It.
Like, the surgeon who didn't get much sleep the last night and has to go in and do a surgery versus a robot who can move way more precisely. Like, you know
there
what
are,
I mean?
There are lots of things that I think error correction is super high on this list. There's more. You know what? I'm looking at the time. Let's do this. We're running long, and I threw a question out that kind of threw us off. I really think it's a topic for another show entirely, but we may come back to it. But look, we got to take a break, so stick around. Let's grab that. We will come back. We're still talking tariffs, talking about China, and I got to ask you, Matt, like, so what does this mean domestically? We're talking onshoring, but what does it mean for our investors too?
Let's talk about that.
Well, let's do, but we got to be taking a quick break. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where Matt is driving the bus today.
Yep, and we drove it right off a cliff into tariff land.
Tariff land? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it sound like, all right, you guys get caught up. You know the podcast drill. Go to our website. It's littlejohnfs.com, and you can get caught up on that and all kinds of other goodies, right?
Right.
You know, so China gets reciprocal tariffs. It's really interesting. Right at the break, one of the news updates talked a little bit about how Canada is set to do a reciprocal tariff on U.S. autos or trucks, I think, but hitting at midnight tonight.
It got a little more granular.
Well, that has been my theory this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My theory is that the administration is not doing this with the intent to have these tariffs stick at all. It's with the intent to get to negotiation tables and start to get more serious about, like, look, you guys have been putting tariffs on us and they're sort of indiscriminate. They've been like this for a long time, and we need to sort of reapproach what we're doing here. I ultimately think, and it's a shame because I think, like, Canada as a neighbor, I think they're pretty good neighbors, right? I mean,
sure.
I like Canada as a neighbor. And, like, even Mexico as a neighbor, like, my personal engagement with, you know, everybody from Mexico has been fantastic. We got to sort the border stuff out and, like, do this legit. It's time that we figure out appropriate ways to improve our immigration programs. You know, it's just really difficult. There's too many incentives to do it the wrong way. We got to fix that. But our neighbors are great, right?
I mean, right.
And I don't know anywhere in the world that doesn't have great people. I just think sometimes there's places in the world where it's got bad leadership or maybe some certain fringe groups with bad ideologies. And, you know, you just can't have that in a world that's going to be cooperative.
Yeah.
So hope I said that as PC as possible, that, you know, there are people out there that suck.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But most people don't suck. Right. Most it's not fair to, like, paint the whole world as, like, everybody's bad. Right. That's not a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, radical people that want to kill other people. I have a problem with that. Right. If like your ideal, if your ideal world is that you have to kill everybody else, you're broken. Just saying. But back to Canada here. I think what happens is we get granular deals, meaning these tariffs are not just like, well, everything under the sun, you pay this tariff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a, look, you got to give a little, you got to get a little. And so, all right, you want to tariff certain things to protect your own industries, okay. But you got to give somewhere else where it makes sense. It can't just be a one-way street where the United States is the only one taking it on the chin. Right. You know, the idea like, oh, China has a 67% tariff and the United States gets nothing. And it's like, and if you push back on that, you're the bad guy. I'm like, really? Like, that's where we're at. Really? Mm-hmm.
Isn't it crazy to think that, like, you hear news headlines of like Trump hits China with 100% tariff. Right.
Yeah.
But when you start actually getting down to the numbers under the hood, it's like, well, if that were to stick and China didn't react, now we have close to semi-fair trade.
Like, yeah, it's like, almost at parity.
It's almost at parity, right, just on like what the number is. Now, granted, obviously we're buying a lot more from China than we're sending there. I get that part.
Yeah.
But
well, and here's the other thing. Trade is not inherently equal. Like, trade deficits aren't necessarily a problem. It's a great, simple example, but right, like, I have a trade deficit with my barber, okay? Like, I pay for haircuts. He doesn't have to pay me for anything, right? It's like, I get a haircut, I get what I paid for, he gets paid, and that's technically a trade deficit by definition, right? He got paid one direction and not reciprocally. And that's true. And so it's like, okay, well, that can happen. I think where it's not cool is like, hey, if I trade with you, it is what it costs. But you know, if it's the other way around, I have to pay a tax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, well, that's the part that's not very cool. So I'll admit to not knowing why.
I think.
But like, oh, well, it's a 250% tax on anything you sell to our country, but you can't tax us for anything we sell to yours.
And I think that when I looked this up, and I could be wrong, but I think that the total deficit was over $1 trillion worldwide a year.
Of trade?
Yeah.
Oh, it's more than that. I mean, like, the United States is big consumer economy. So there's definitely a trade deficit, you know, I think largely, period, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
we consume more than we send out. And so that's a bit of an issue.
Right. Well, we're starting to see a lot of effects, right? And mm-hmm. I know that I think it was – I don't know if it was China or Vietnam, but I think we had like a 15% steel tariff. Do you remember the news on that? It happened a little while back. But there was the steel tariff, and so we applied that, and then what we saw was steel went up 8% from there, mm-hmm. right? And so that started to change. And then if you start to look at like – because the Vietnam piece is actually really big. People are not fully understanding what's going on there. Mm. And I think it's worth bringing up because it's just as big to me almost as the Chinese tariff that we have going on. China was taking a lot of products and sending it either 99% assembled or sometimes even 100% assembled, sending it to Vietnam. And then
they put the label on it.
They put the label
out and avoid the tariffs.
Yeah. Well, and then so Vietnam had like, I think, what was it? A 96% tariff on the United States. Well, when we applied the 48% tariff for things coming from Vietnam to the United States, China looks at that and they're like, oh, man, like you just got us on our loophole.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so what we saw in the aftershocks of that is we had over 200 big corporations agree to reshore here in the United States just off of, you know, one piece of news coming through like that. And so we are starting to build again as a country. And it's just, it's a question, I think, of how long does it take? Where do the jobs really land? Who fills them?
Yeah.
Because
you start to look around and go, I wonder what talented robotics companies are out there that we need to be investigating.
It's crazy because unemployment, like, I mean, it has gone higher, but I think it's only at like 4.3%.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still, most economists would say we're still at full employment, even though we have unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
That pretty much the people that want jobs have jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see who fills these positions and how much actual investment do we get here in the United States.
Yeah.
But what's crazy, and remember we talked about this before we went on break, is the stock market and the economy don't always walk step for step together.
Oh,
right?
I think they seldom do. This is right. kind of a rare scenario where GDP is wagging the dog. Like, people seem to be pricing stocks based on GDP. And I'm like, well, what's different this time?
Well, when I look at this and I say, over the course, but the stock market looks into the future, right? They're looking at right now, right? The markets are looking at now mm-hmm. and in the future. But how far into the future do stocks in the market really tend to look? What, 3 to 6 months?
Maybe.
I
am more convinced today than I have been in a long time that a lot of the price of the stock market is based on sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
Than I wanted to admit for a long time. I mean, all of a sudden I'm starting to see, this is not a big duh statement. It's going to sound like it, right? I see the wisdom of Warren Buffett is different than I did before this event, because he's always been sort of a long-term buy and hold guy, and he would look at things and say, it just looks expensive, right? And then the markets would keep going up. He's been saying it looked expensive for the last 2 years. And I would say it probably was by historic measurements, but I don't even know that that's what he was really thinking. I mean, maybe the market looks expensive, but I think he's just looking at it and saying, well, there's too many people that feel like the market's a pretty good gig right now, and I just have to wait until there's panic.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, how quickly did the sentiment shift? That's the crazy thing. Sentiment was so positive and extremely bullish for a really long time. And then...
Well, it tells you how fickle we are, right? Four trading days, Matt.
You're right.
In four trading days, people went from... Well, and I guess it was sliding, right? But, you know, we were off like 7-8% year to date. And then in four trading days, we lost like 15%.
Right.
And you just think, well... How fickle are we as air quote investors?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, for most of the people that we're working with, they go, not that fickle, actually. People, I think, realize that this is driven by a news blitz. And I don't even know that it's driven by that much significant retail volume and panic. I think it's just a moment in time where the trading's really aggressive in one direction.
Volume's been really high. I've been looking at how much trading volume there is.
Right, but volume is still on both sides. It's mm-hmm. not only
right.
selling. I mean, I haven't looked, but I'll bet you that there's a lot of churn. I bet the high-frequency traders are loving this. You see the VIX way up, so you've got all kinds of people that are trading options right now. And so the derivative marketplace is going bananas right now.
Right.
So, it's just an interesting point in history where what we had was a lightning rod event that triggered a big move. And now everybody gets to reposition.
Yeah, and I think that when you talk about repositioning, that's a really big piece of all of this, right? Because mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is countries are starting to realign who they want to side with, right? And that's been in the news a lot. They've nicknamed it BRICS, right? So Brazil.
That is not new.
Well,
that BRICS have been around since pre-2008.
Yeah.
Brazil, Russia, India, China.
Yeah. So in South Africa too, but that alliance, I feel like, has been getting really strong as of late, right? Because, mm-hmm. and I think we can kind of go back to when Russia invaded Ukraine. That was a big pivotal moment because we started to impose sanctions on Russia and things started to change
the energy markets for sure.
It changed the energy markets. And so you're looking at these countries that are forming closer and closer alliances. And, you know, you got to look at that and say, well, what's the long-term impact of that? And where do things shift from here? Because maybe the U.S. isn't relied upon as heavily from those countries moving forward. So, you know, maybe it becomes more of a national, you know, concentration of jobs and resources.
Yeah.
Like maybe we rely more on our own oil.
That'll be an interesting one, right? I mean, there's so many what ifs to this, but I think that maybe looking 12 months out during the current scenario,
it's hard.
Is irrational.
It's hard to do.
I think this is one thing I'm really shocked at is the speed and veracity at which the Trump administration is making change. It's just not something we've seen before. It's
mm-hmm.
so aggressive, and in many respects, it's hard to separate, you know, the good and the bad, because it's kind of a blur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard to get good information right now. There's just so much partisanship in the way news is presented from all the angles, right? That's not throwing rocks at one side or the other. It's like just everywhere you look, the news is largely sold to us, which means it is curated for an audience. And that audience, it needs to align, right? You know where you get your news from, and you know the general tilt of it. Some people try to, you know, get all the sides, but most people, they have an area that they lean into. And you know that. I'm not telling you something you don't know.
Let me ask you something. This is where I get curious. So obviously we've had issues with inflation, right? Like inflation's been pretty hot. And then the Fed does what it does with interest rates. And so we get higher rates. And now we've got tariffs, which seem to be inflationary, right, in nature.
Okay.
So you get inflation, high rates, and then another potentially inflationary rate, high mortgage rates. How do you think the Fed might try and handle all of this? And will they be able to kind of keep things from, you know, getting dicier? Like, will the Fed be able to navigate this? And how do you think that whole thing plays out?
All right. I see. And I thought he was going to give me like a yes or no question and I could cop out. And then you left it open-ended at the end.
I am famous for doing this and you know it.
Yeah. All right. Look, let's unpack the Fed in the last segment here, but we got to take our last break. All right. Okay. So everybody stick around. If you want just a little bit of maybe insight into what the Fed may or may not do, and just a news flash ahead of time, it's a guess, right? But we'll try to guess at it.
So I like guesses.
Around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
All right. And so, Matt, you asked me what I think was a loaded question about, hey, where do we think rates are headed? And, you know, well, basically said, what do you think the Fed's going to do given what we're looking
right.
at? And during the break, I kind of surprised Matt with this answer, but let me set the table for our listeners a little bit. Mm-hmm. Remember, the Fed is the central bank. They're responsible for setting short-term interest rates.
Oh, yeah.
And current rates set at between 425 and 450 basis points, which means 4.25 to 4.5%.
Mm.
Okay? And that target rate is what they would typically say, hey, you know, between banks, this is what it costs to lend money.
Okay.
If the Fed wants to slow the economy down, if it's getting hot and there's inflation, they would raise rates typically. Mm-hmm. That makes it harder to borrow money. But if they want to speed stuff up, they would lower the rate, right? It makes it easier and cheaper to borrow money. This is like the housing market, right? The cheaper the mortgage is, the more people spend on houses. Okay?
Right.
So that's the basic backdrop. Now, Matt, you kind of pointed out, tariffs are inflationary, right?
Right.
Okay. So, but the problem with tariffs is it is also an economic headwind, which is slows down the economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which in theory would be deflationary. Okay.
Yep.
And then somebody comes along and says, well, that sounds like stagflation to me. The economy is contracting, but the price of things is going up. That sounds like a terrible idea.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
And you go, yeah. Okay. And then we throw into it the mix of what if these tariffs were not intended to be a permanent policy, but were intended to be a negotiation tool.
Right. And the Fed has to consider that as a potential.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things the Trump administration has stated is that they would like to see lower rates. One of the reasons for this is that strategically it is useful because they would like to refinance some of the debt already on the books to lower the debt service that the federal government is paying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they want rates to be lower. Now, I don't think that you burn your house down to cook a steak is the analogy out there, right? So it's like, you know, these tariffs would be the equivalent of like burn the economy down in order to force rates lower.
Mm-hmm.
That seems counterproductive.
Yeah, that seems pretty hard to believe.
Right. I think the Fed is backed into a corner because it also does not want to appear terribly partisan, right? And it is sort of caught between a rock and a hard place on that because I think there have been some things that look somewhat partisan. I think that there's a higher probability that the Fed in their next meeting, which is about 28 days from now, does nothing.
Hmm.
I think they will say, we don't have enough data. This needs to shake out. And I think it's likely the markets stay about where they're at. And we've seen a couple of indications that that's the case. We've seen the bond markets relatively stable. Yields actually went, they kind of dipped for a little while.
Yeah.
And then they went, so that was the equivalent of like people run into bonds and then back out. And so the market is showing some signs of capitulation as if buyers are starting to sniff around at this price point.
Yeah.
And so I'm just not convinced the Fed has to do anything radical.
Okay.
But it's just a guess. Right. Yeah. And like this is one, it's not advice. It's not a guarantee. It's nothing. It's just sort of my hot take with the information I have right now.
Okay. So yeah. You kind of see this playing out in the history books as remember that one time where there was all these talks of tariffs and eventually it got negotiated in a reasonable amount of time. And then the market realized that was a really big reaction to the news cycle.
I think that there's still it's really difficult in the news cycle, and it's really difficult with a country that's very polarized, with a leader that's very polarizing, mm-hmm. to make heads or tails of what's going on. And I think part of Trump's strategy is to keep people off balance, right? And I don't think his decision making is grounded in how the market behaves. I think his decision making is just grounded in how he's trying to affect an outcome. And
right.
The stock market is not really wagging the dog for him.
No.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But the truth of the matter is, even if we had more to say, we don't have time to say it. So
really, we're already there.
We are at the clock. So look, quick reminder, if you want to get more information, what's our phone number, Matt?
541-375-0898.
And your favorite email address?
info@littlejohnfs.com.
All right. Well, look, we are out of time for now. So until next time, thank you for tuning in and joining us. I'm David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.